Welcome back, gamers, to this segment of the Uninformed Gamers Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review. And joining me today is Darkness Tiger, also known as Devin.
That is me. Yo, what is going on? I am here. I am happy to be here. Happy to talk to you, Mason.
Yes.
Obviously, we were out last week.
And we had some big news that happened, which is why our other host, Chris or I, Chameleon, will not be joining us. If you want, we can say it, or we can wait till he comes back and he can say it.
Well, I think we should probably talk about it. Well, he can talk about the specific details.
Yeah.
But we'll mention the reason we were not here last week is because there is a new Uninformed Gamers has joined the world.
Yes. Yes.
Chris is finally a father.
Yeah, very exciting. Yes, him and his partner had a child, so very exciting for them.
Very exciting, and hopefully he'll be here with us next week to tell you all about the details. But just this week, you get the two of the greatest hosts of video game podcast ever.
Yes, Brad Dean Review. And that is no hyperbole.
That is no hyperbole. It is actually fact. It is on Wikipedia somewhere that Brad Dean Review and Darkness Tiger together are the best podcasters.
Yes.
So let's get into the gig, Mason. What's been going on since we last spoke?
Quite a bit, actually. Been catching up on a lot of shows. And I am proud to say that I have been playing the video game Hades and have beaten it.
Hey, shout out. Was it hard?
Yes, very much so. So here's my experience with the game. So I started playing the Hades, the game, on Steam when it first came out in beta test. And I was never able to beat it. And then it finally like released officially, and I continued to play it on, you know, PC and Steam. Still no success. Like, the farthest I ever got was I beat the Hydra.
Yeah.
Which is the second boss of the game. And in total, there are, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, there's like 4 or 5 like main bosses, technically. Okay. I want to say.
So you made it about halfway every time.
Yeah, every time. It's a very difficult game. You have to really be on your A game every single time. For those of you who don't know, you know, Hades is a permadeath game where, you know, you're given a life and you're expected to beat the game on that one life. But there are ways to kind of game the system through, like, I'm going to call them perks that you can purchase with, like, coins that you accrue throughout the game, or via a Shadow Essence, which is like another type of currency that you can get to buff your main character Zagreus, who is the son of Hades. Mm-hmm. So through this Shadow Essence, you're actually able to buy a perk that allows you to revive instantaneously when you die.
Oh, okay.
And that was how I was able to beat it, like, the first time, is I had like 2 of those perks. So technically speaking, I had 2 lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to beat it finally, and then I decided to like play through it again to see if I could beat it again, and like the very next playthrough I was able to beat it without even dying once.
Oh wow.
So I was like really, really happy about that. But essentially, like, if you haven't played the game, it's a ton of fun. The art style is amazing. The gameplay is a lot of fun, a lot of action, there's a lot of moving parts. Music is amazing.
What would you say was harder, Elden Ring or Hades? Ooh, the pause.
That's actually tough. I would say, honestly, Hades was harder for me.
Wow, really?
Because the things that gave me pause in Elden Ring were the side boss, Melania, mm-hmm. and the final boss, the Elden Beast, but it didn't take me like years to beat the game.
right.
Like, you know, Hades has been out for, you know, years. And I played it pretty frequently, longer than I played Elden Ring. I just couldn't like finish it.
Now, did you are you completely done with Elden Ring? You're not going back, or you still got some stuff to finish up there?
I mean, I could go back to Elden Ring. I mean, I like the game. And I would be interested to play through it again, just with a different like build.
Mm-hmm.
To see how that goes, like do a magic build or something like that, like something different, because you know my build when I first played through the game was like a up close and personal, you know, hack and slash sort of thing.
I don't think I've ever played an RPG where I did hack and slash.
Yeah, it's very appealing, like especially like stealth games.
Yeah,
like when you're given the option to either like you know do stealth stuff or just going guns blazing. Sometimes I like to do the guns blazing.
Knowing, and there's literally nothing wrong with that. But besides Hades, what else have you been getting into?
That's essentially it, really. Like that was really monopolizing my time, was Hades, anime, movies. That's pretty much it, really.
All right, how about you? Fair enough. On my end, it's been the exact opposite. I have been playing a lot of games.
Nice.
The reason being is because finally, and I can safely say this on the record, I finally beat Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hey. Yep, I know you were playing that for quite a bit.
I was playing it for way longer than I probably should have. Because, again, I have a lot of games to play through. And even when I felt like I beat the game, apparently I hadn't beat the game. So I had to keep going. And I'm like, all right, cool. So then I finally beat it, got the credits, got the in-game plus. So instead of me going back and doing in-game plus to continue getting 100% of everything, I'm actually taking a break because I was on Game Pass on my Xbox, and I saw two particular games that caught my attention. I thought one game was the other game, which I thought was really comical. Mm-hmm. The first game I ended up downloading was called Road 96, which is a multi-platform game. I believe it was also on PC, where you're tasked with getting your character across the border from a tyrant. So basically, the country is run and helmed by an actual like a tyrannical leader, a dictator. So you're just trying to actively get out of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been absolutely amazing. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But that's not the game that I thought it was going to be when I downloaded it. You see, the game that I wanted it to be when I started the initial download was the game that we saw at the Xbox Summer Showcase that was fully narrative-based. I'm trying to pull it up, but my thing is being very slow right now.
Oh, you're okay.
But I will get you the name of that. And it was called Dusk Falls.
Oh, okay.
I downloaded it and I was like, oh, great, I can't wait to play this. And only to find out that actuality, I downloaded it too early. I cannot play it. So it was it released officially on July 18th.
Yeah.
But I have yet to play it. But if I do, I'm going to give you guys a good review. So I've been working my way through Road 96, Formula One 2022. And this past weekend, I finally bit the bullet. I finally started Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Very nice. I was actually half debating on starting to play that too.
I have to say, it's always different starting an Assassin's Creed game, and this one is the most different by far.
How so?
The Viking setting and the Viking story up to this point, it doesn't seem like an Assassin's Creed game. It just seems like a Viking game with Assassin's Creed elements.
Yeah.
Whereas Origins and Odyssey, you can still kind of make that similar connection. This one seems like they're really stretching to make it work. It's still, so far, a really great story. I love it visually. I think visually it's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that the second I booted it up, I just said to myself, feels like it's going to be a grind. And so far, it has been a grind. So far, I have not, like, it has not made that Odyssey spark for me yet.
Okay, and that's fair. I still have yet to play Odyssey.
I think out of all of them, Odyssey is probably my number one, only because I really love Greek mythology.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I love Greek mythology and I love Norse mythology. I just like mythology in general.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I haven't been playing my PS5 as much because, again, I just have a lot on my plate.
Yeah.
But I ended up going onto my PlayStation because I saw that there was this new game called Stray.
Yes. About the kitty cat.
About the kitty cat.
Meow.
I was under the impression that if you are a PS Plus subscriber, you can download the game for free, right?
Oh, can you?
No, you cannot.
Ah, boo.
You have to be a premium plus. You have to be a.
Oh, so you have to be a part of the new tier.
Yep, you have to be the highest of the tiers to download 20.
So that's how they get you.
Yep, exactly. So I ended up buying the premium membership. It was only $3 upgrade for me, since I already paid for the majority of the month anyway.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, so I had to beat the game in a week. But we'll talk more about Stray in a little bit.
Yes.
Let's get into our stories for the day. And the first one we have on the docket here is about Gran Turismo. Now, Mason, have you ever gotten like big into esports? Is that really your vibe? Or?
Yeah, I love watching competitive gaming. I know there are a lot of folks that don't consider electronic sports to be sports, but I have to respectfully, you know, disagree,
mm-hmm.
because it does require, you know, granted, the aspect of playing games may not be as physically demanding as, you know, other sports per se, but it's still demanding nonetheless. Like, it does tax your mind, it can tax your body just in different ways, people pay to watch it, people pay to compete, there's prizes, there's sponsors. I mean, in all honesty, like, it's pretty much a sport. Like, when you have the freaking world championships of League of Legends garnering a viewership count higher than the Super Bowl and Major League Baseball's World Series combined, I think you got something.
Agreed. I think that if you look at the definition of the word sport, it's an activity involving physical exertion and mm-hmm. skill in which an individual or team competes against others or against another or others for entertainment.
Exactly.
So yeah, and I would consider esports sports.
Like, I think the biggest argument is that people say that playing a game isn't physically demanding. But again, I would have to disagree with that, because it can be demanding.
Oh, absolutely. Especially just talking from a racing perspective. I actually have the full racing wheel setup. Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I got the pedals. I got the I got the shifter. I got the wheel. I got literally the whole setup. And every now and then I have my dad just kind of sit down in it and just play it just to see how he does on it. And he's told me that he can no longer do it at night.
Oh, why is that?
Because because he is so focused and it hypes him up so much that he can't go to sleep. And when you're driving these cars and the steering wheel is fighting you back, like, you actually start to sweat. And so I think, as you said, esports is a major sport, even though a lot of people don't give it that credit. Mm-hmm. It has become a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Like, in my opinion, like, if poker can be a sport, fucking video games can be a sport.
Absolutely.
Like,
now, the reason I bring this particular thing up is because one thing that we haven't noticed a whole lot of in the esports arena or realm is racing games.
Yes. And I do think there is a reason for that.
What do you think the reason is?
Like, from the outside going, like, looking in as a viewer of esports myself, as a racing game enthusiast myself, I love racing games. Not as much as you, Devin, I still enjoy them. I would say the entertainment aspect of a racing game isn't as appealing as, let's say, first-person shooters or other popular games. It's just the entertainment aspect isn't quite there. There's not as much, like, highlightable moments for me.
Yeah.
Like in shooters or in tower defense games, like League of Legends or Defender of the Ancients, or let's say Overwatch, you know, Call of Duty, Counter-Strike, etc. Like, there are moments when the audience can visibly see, like, a hype moment and get involved. Whereas in racing games, you're just, you know, watching people drive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, just the aspect of watching somebody else drive might not be exciting, at least in terms of, like, digitally, because, like, no, NASCAR is a thing and that's exciting for people.
Well, I think you just hit the nail right there on the head when you said it's exciting for people. because not everybody finds racing in yes. general exciting to watch.
Yeah, it's not as marketable as the other esports.
Yes.
So that's now, that's my kind of thought process.
It's not as marketed, and as you said, it's a lot of people really aren't into racing itself. But I also think it comes down to promotion.
Yes.
Like, are companies willing to go ahead and put the dollar out there to market, to advertise, to make it as big as it could be? Or because, oh, it's just really a one-off, nobody really watches, we won't really invest a whole lot into it. Well, the reason I bring this particular topic up, because an article recently appeared, I believe, on Jalopnik, and it discusses what happened with the Gran Turismo esports arena. Now, one thing that I always assumed was that if you are playing in the top tier of esports competitors, you mm-hmm. get paid, right?
Yeah, I mean, one would think.
One would think. That is not the case if you played Gran Turismo. During Gran Turismo, there have been shown from actual testimonies from people who've played, who were in the top tier for years, that they never earned a penny by doing it.
I mean, did they get any money via like sponsorship deals or no? Not even that.
The problem with that is that apparently Polyphony would not allow them to take sponsorships, and they would not really allow any of that to happen.
Really?
So Polyphony would fly them all over the world, would put them in hotels, would pay for all their food and stuff, and would have them racing. And when it came time for a winner, they might get a racing wheel, like the GT racing wheel, which is, I guess, the number one. But there was never any prize money given. And because so here's what it says. But outside of this, regardless of your own results, you'd get absolutely no money out of it. Pagnadet continued. And he pointed out a restriction unique in the world of Gran Turismo. Players are barred from wearing any team or sponsor logos during competition. The dress code was to wear GT jerseys, glove, and boots on stage, and was mandatory, hindering the biggest opportunities to get something financial out of it. So they weren't even allowed to have sponsorships on their clothing unless it was Gran Turismo.
Hmm.
Now, when I sent this article to my coworker and friend who's also playing Gran Turismo, he noticed that some of the people that were interviewed for this particular story are currently featured in the Gran Turismo 7 video game, but as non-speaking roles. So what they were paid in was exposure, but since they did not have a speaking role, they were not actually ever paid. Now,
interesting.
I am a firm believer that if you are in the top tier of any kind of esports gaming, there should be some kind of monetary reason for you to do so, right? Because this takes up your time. One individual said that they were practicing for about 50 hours every week just so they can be on the top of the Gran Turismo world. That's a full-time job.
It is.
And to see that you're not getting paid anything at the end of it is the reason why quite a few of the people who have interviewed and who were top competitors no longer compete and have absolutely no indication of ever competing again for Gran Turismo. Personally, I think this is really disheartening because I've been mulling this, getting into racing esports.
Yeah, because, I mean, clearly you are good enough.
Yep. You saw the picture I posted. I sent you guys.
It is unfortunate that there's not a lot of support for, you know, racing enthusiasts.
Yeah, there's not a lot of support. And I was hoping that Gran Turismo would kind of like bring that support back into the fold, but appears to not to be the case, really.
So this brings to mind something similar in the esports realm, but with fighting games. So mm-hmm. one fighting game in particular, and that is Super Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So Nintendo is notoriously famous for not supporting the game in the fighting game sphere. Even when it was at Evo, like they were not the ones that like supported the prizing. Like they had this like hands-off approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
They just let the organizers do it. But then they just disallowed it from being at Evo just straight up after some time. I forget when exactly it was done, but basically what ended up happening is players in the community had to take it upon themselves to kind of like battle up on the mantle and organize tournaments themselves and offer prize money themselves. Like, everything is out of pocket from them. And Nintendo's just like, if you want to do that, more power to you, but we are not going to be affiliated with anybody for this game.
That seems very odd position to take, that if you
have people
who are willing to organize massive competitions, that you would think would be supportive of it.
Yeah, like the best example of the player that has really championed the cause of Super Smash Brothers to bring it on a competitive level and offer prizing at the same time is the player Hungrybox.
Mm-hmm.
And he hosts like online tournaments where the prizing is within, you know, thousands of dollars. So like, he's been able to like foster his own community with like-minded individuals who are as passionate about the game as him. So at least there's that. So my hope for Gran Turismo, Devin, is that maybe somebody in the community who's passionate can take it upon themselves to develop like some sort of like circuit or some sort of tournament for players and just offer prizing themselves.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. I'll keep my ears and nose to the ground for that, because again, that's something I think I'd really wanted to get interested in. But as I mentioned, it's a little disheartening to see that there are games that are competitive games where there's really no like end for it. And someone made in this article on Jalopnik, someone pointed out a great point. I think it was in the comments. They were just like, this has really become the biggest level of gatekeeping, because in racing, you can't become a top race car driver unless you have a lot of money.
Exactly.
So now it seems like in esports, you have to be funded to do that. Like, somebody has to be paying your bill just so you can do this.
Exactly.
And it's not right, but
it isn't.
Let's move on to something a little more of a positive note.
Yeah, this is actually super exciting, honestly. I'm very, very in support of this news.
See, now, the story that we're talking about here has to do actually with Discord.
Yes, and Xbox.
Now, this is interesting, because didn't Sony buy a minority stake in Discord?
I think so.
Yeah, I could have swore I recall.
Maybe.
I recall Sony buying some part of Discord.
Let's see.
Okay, so yeah, so I guess Sony did apparently buy a minority share.
Mm-hmm.
They announced a partnership with Discord, and their goal in 2001 was to bring Discord and PlayStation experiences closer together on console and mobile starting early this year. And what did this story tell us?
Well, the Sony aspect didn't really happen, right?
The Sony aspect did not happen at all. And Xbox, surprisingly and weirdly, is getting Discord before Sony did.
Yes, and it's going to happen very, very soon.
Yeah, because Xbox insiders are currently already have access to it. So I believe I think that might be Chris. I'm not an insider.
Yeah, I'm not either. So what's really cool is that it's going to integrate to the Xbox Series X and S and Xbox One consoles. And as you said, the Insider program allows those participants to access these features today.
Yeah, but when I first heard this, I'm thinking, oh, okay, I can just open up like a little text box on the Xbox, go into my Discord, just have a Discord conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that simple. The process is pretty convoluted. The process of connecting your Xbox and Discord accounts and starting a voice chat is pretty involved. First, you have to download the Xbox mobile app as a use your phone to transfer Discord calls to an Xbox. Then you have to connect your Xbox account to your Discord one. If you connected them in the past, the instructions state that you need to do so again to accept the new voice permissions. Once that's done, whenever you want to talk with your Discord people on Xbox, you can start a call on Discord, hit the transfer to Xbox button, choose an Xbox console on the Xbox mobile app, and you're done.
Huh.
That's a little bit a lot for me.
While you were explaining it, I kind of wanted to play like the Inception music, like the da 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 da.
It's a little involved.
It is. It seems a little convoluted. Like you're almost better off just connecting to Discord via like your phone or PC, and just do it that way.
Yeah, I think that if anybody can simplify the process, it's absolutely Microsoft. I think this is one of those scenarios where they just kind of wanted to beat Sony to the punch, and it looks like they're going to do that. But initially, I think that they're going to need to simplify this for the majority.
Yeah, I mean, it'll need some work. I mean, I think with these, what are they called? The insider program people, I think their feedback will be pretty crucial to improving it.
Oh, yeah. So if you are an Xbox insider and you've been able to try out the Discord, be sure to send us a message or a tweet at Twitter at the Uninformed Gamers. Now let's get into something that it's a messy topic.
Yeah. So this next topic, we'll try not to make it as convoluted as it seems to be.
We'll try not to make it as convoluted as it is.
Yeah. Cause it can be convoluted. And what we're going to talk on is the Twitter versus Elon Musk battle. So, way back when, you know, we all know that Elon Musk expressed interest in purchasing Twitter, and him and was Jack Dorsey, correct?
I believe, no, not Jack Dorsey, the guy after Jack Dorsey. So Jack Dorsey actually stepped down.
Oh, he stepped down.
And then the guy, so the new guy is Parag Agrawal.
Okay, so. Yeah, Musk wanted to buy Twitter. Him and the new owner of Twitter did have meetings, multiple meetings, to discuss, you know, hey, what's a fair price, you know, and then they formulated a binding contract, a written contract that was binding, and it was for, what, $54 billion or something like that?
$44 billion.
Oh, 44, not 54. Okay, so $44 billion for the deal. So some time had passed. We hadn't really heard too much, and then all of a sudden, Elon Musk says, "Hey, I'm backing out of the deal because Twitter did not want to disclose some information about like bot accounts for Twitter."
Yeah. They basically, Elon's argument was that when he initially agreed to the deal, he was under the impression that it had this many bots that were active users.
Yeah.
However, once the deal had gotten started, he basically said that, and again, we don't know, neither of us know anything, we're just looking at what has been reported in the news.
Yep.
Was that Twitter had way more bots and that he was attempting to back out of the deal because Twitter did not keep up their end.
Yeah. So I don't know if that aspect was a part of the written contract. There's a lot of things that I like don't know about their specific deals in regards to like their agreement. But the one thing I do know that was a part of the agreement was, you know, Elon Musk backing away. You know, it was a binding contract, and a judge who handles these sorts of acquisitions has now been assigned to a case in which, you know, Twitter is suing Elon Musk for backing out of the deal. So the judge is going to do a 5-day trial in October, and they're going to try to figure out, does Elon Musk need to, or will he be forced to purchase Twitter, or will he have to pay a hefty penalty for backing out of the deal?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, is can you force someone to pay for something?
Yes, so the only reason why in this instance that you can is because of the already established binding contract that both parties agreed to, signed, and filled out. If that didn't happen, then you can't technically like force anybody to do it.
Right.
But since they went ahead and did that kind of like contractual agreement, like Twitter does have grounds to sue Musk for damages, or at least force him to go ahead with the purchase or pay a penalty.
Now, I know that Elon actually did not want the trial to happen this year. He was actually hoping to push it, I think, into like either February or March of 2023. And his lawyer's reasoning is that they needed time to do investigations and double check all the facts. And the reason why it's being held in October, because Twitter originally wanted it in September.
Yes.
The reason why it was pushed to October is because the judge was like, well, they gave you everything that you requested, so you should already have it.
Yeah.
And you have that information before you kind of like decided to rip the deal up. So
exactly.
Why would you need additional time?
And another thing, too, when you're dealing with these sorts of deals, like Twitter's value has been substantially affected by this. And every day that we don't get a resolution to this, their value gets affected. And that was part of the judge's reasoning for pushing the case to October, because she was just like, hey, every day that passes, they potentially like lose value because of Musk backing out and there not being any consequences to that.
Which, I mean, again, if you're making a deal to purchase something, you kind of can't back out. Especially, I'm a firm believer you shouldn't make a deal unless you have all the information available ahead of time.
Exactly. Like, I think, like, Musk really just got too ahead of himself and bit off more than he thought he could chew.
Well, you mentioned that Twitter stocks has been kind of fluctuating since this transpired, but Twitter has not been the only stock that has kind of moved up and down. So
no, Tesla has too.
And I think that's also a bit of the problem, because Tesla stock actually dropped.
Yes. And
Elon Musk, obviously, since he owns a large share of Tesla, his net worth also dropped. So yes. The question came into play is just like, does he even have the money to afford this? Personally, I think as of right now, let me double check Elon Musk's net worth, because this changes by the second. All right, so Elon Musk is currently worth $230 billion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it was me and I didn't want to buy Twitter, I would just pay the $1 billion.
Yeah.
I would just pay the $1 billion, because it's like me having $230 in my pocket and losing a dollar. I don't care. I do not care. And especially since it doesn't seem like this is the route that he wants to go, whether you want Elon Musk to have Twitter or not, it's not really our concern. It's just reporting the facts of.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether you like it or not, the trial is going to take place in October, and we're going to keep our eyes on the story.
I'm definitely curious how it's going to pan out.
I have no idea how it's going to pan out. I literally don't know where it's going to fall. Because Elon Musk is the richest person on the planet. So I can imagine he can bring this out into litigation forever.
Yeah. I mean, what I think will end up happening is I don't think he'll be forced to purchase it. I do think he'll end up paying like a penalty.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But
that's what I think.
We'll see. We'll keep in October. We'll report back on the story with the details for all of you to listen to.
Yes. 100%.
Let's change it up to a different topic. Earlier in our podcast shootings, Chris and I played a EA game together, and the game was called Anthem. Now, the reason him and I both played this game together is because we had heard that EA was just kind of done with the game. They weren't going to continue building upon the success. It really was not like a bread and butter winner for them.
So yeah, they kind of like gave up on the game.
They did give. Let's be honest. You're 100% right. They gave up on the game. And Chris and I were like, well, let's check to see if this game is even worth giving up on. We played it. We both enjoyed some aspects. We see where there could have been improved. And we were like, you know what? We think Anthem has a good basis to build here. EA should really continue this. EA decided against what we thought, and they shut the shit down. Well, if you've recently stopped at a GameStop, you might have seen Anthem for sale for a suspiciously low price of $0.01. I have never heard of this before, Mason. Have you?
I've never heard of a game being sold for a penny.
Well, apparently, GameStop is known for doing this quite frequently when either a game and or a product is virtually no longer worthwhile for them to keep.
Oh, you know what? This reminds me of the oh gosh, what was that freaking Skylanders ripoff called that Disney did?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Oh my god.
Skylanders, that's funny.
But basically, like, I don't recall what it was called off the top of my head, but Disney did a Skylanders ripoff video game where, you know, you have your figures and then you scan them in and all that shit.
Disney Infinity?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That game got discontinued and they didn't offer any support for it. And as soon as that happened, like the game itself dropped significantly in value to like a dollar or less. And like the figures are just stocking the shelves of like freaking secondhand stores like CD Game Exchange or like Buybacks or something like that. Like, you can't even use the figures in the game anymore from what I've heard, but I could be wrong.
That is
because I don't know how anybody plays Disney Infinity now. If anybody listening still plays or has the ability to, let us know, because I'm legitimately curious.
Or if you're playing Anthem, let us know.
Yeah, exactly. And then another thing that reminds me of is the Shonen Jump Jump Force, like when that was announced.
Yeah, I remember that one.
We talked at it on the podcast where they were shutting down the servers.
Yep.
And I don't know if the servers got shut down yet, but I know when they announced the game being like shut down more or less in terms of like the servers, the value of the game itself dropped significantly.
Yep. So apparently this can also happen with like hard or like what is it, the book game guides or whatever. Mm-hmm. This happens with game guides where people don't play the game anymore. And all I could think about specifically with Anthem, because it's a fairly new game, and it was at one point it was going to be a massive hit. It was supposed to be the next AAA game coming out of EA. All I could think of is, imagine if you spent hours like staying at work late, doing crunch time, so you could release this game, Anthem, and you see the game is being sold for pennies.
Mm.
I bet that must like really hurt. I would not want to be that person. But
no, I wouldn't either.
But I also have zero desire to go back to Anthem now that it's fully dead.
No, I wouldn't go back to the game at all either.
Before we get into that, there is a story that I just recalled, but we did not talk about it ahead of time, Mason.
Okay.
But us talking about Anthem kind of made me think of this. Did you see that Red Dead Online is basically mourning the game's death?
I did hear about this, yes. Which is crazy to me, because it's just like Rockstar is that's a studio,
yeah, Rockstar, right? yeah
so they're more concerned about Grand Theft Auto 5 Online than they are with Red Dead, obviously.
And it's so sad because people are actually going in the graves taking like goodbye pictures saying how much fun they had, that the
yeah game... And it's unfortunate, like it seems that there's support for the online aspect of Red Dead, so I don't get it.
Yeah, it sounds like you still have a community there, but I guess Rockstar is like, it doesn't matter about community as long as we're making money.
Yeah, I mean, which they're trying to milk that GTA cow as much as they can.
No, almost certainly they are, but it's very sad when a game dies.
Yeah, and, oh yeah, it is.
And hopefully Red Dead Redemption 2 will not be on the penny rack. But if it is, I think I will pick that one up because I've never played Red Dead Redemption 2.
I will say, speaking of games like being discontinued or quote unquote dying, I was excited to see that most of the Metal Gear Solid games are coming back, because for a time they got like removed.
Yeah, because of licensing.
Yeah, but now they're coming back. Just in time for the 30th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And briefly, before we talk on the next subject, kind of have to talk about the big elephant in the room regarding Metal Gear Solid. And of course, I'm speaking on Hideo Kojima and how he was wrongfully... identified for the assassination of Shinzo Abe.
Yeah, that
because the internet sucks, people.
The internet is just the dumbest place to be sometimes.
Yeah, so I really hope that him and his team get through this, and hopefully they can, you know, recover, because, you know, his reputation took quite the hit,
mm-hmm.
from this spread of misinformation, which the irony of that does not fall on me at all, because Metal Gear Solid is literally a game about the spreading of misinformation.
I mean, I guess life imitates art.
I guess so. So, I mean, I do wish Hideo Kojima the best. I mean, he's one of my favorite video game developers. So I do wish him well. And obviously, you know, very unfortunate what happened to Shinzo Abe.
Yeah.
I know.
That was crazy.
Yeah, I know when you deal with politics, you know, people can be polarizing. I don't know Shinzo. I don't know his policies. It just sucks. Like, he got killed. You know, it just, like, murder is bad.
Murder is bad. That is the hot take of the day.
So, you can disagree with his policies, but, like, you got to admit, like, hey, you know, killing people is bad.
Exactly. Now, let's move on
to something else.
Let's move on to something that should have been killed.
Yes. agreed.
Too soon. All right.
Oh, yeah, you're not wrong, Devin. This is way too soon.
All right, so we've talked about The Last of Us. We've talked about it. We have our thoughts. We think the original Last of Us was a video game storytelling masterpiece. Yes.
Agreed.
Tens across the board. I believe it was Game of the Year. And then they released Last of Us 2, very similar story. Not as great, but it was up there. Now, the problem with The Last of Us, the original Last of Us, it hasn't been long since it first came out. The original Last of Us came out in 2013. Now, I'm a firm believer in the fact that you do not need to do a remake or remaster of games people still currently play. And Twitter has shown us what happens in the event that you do.
Yes.
Now, Mason, did you see this?
I did. I saw the photo.
So the Twitter page at NaughtyNDC, Naughty Dog Central, did a leaked comparison screenshot of The Last of Us Part 1, comparing the old game, aka the original, with the new game, aka the remaster.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you a question, Mason. Would you pay $70 for this?
Hell no. Hell no. I wouldn't. I don't even think I would pay $50. I think I would. Would I even pay for it? That's the question. I would maybe pay $29.99. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm on the, like, $29.99 is still $30 to me.
Like, I don't know. Like, when I looked at the side-by-side comparison, I couldn't really. There was a difference. There was. But it wasn't so significant that it warrants, like, a $70 price tag. And when, you know, they were called out about it, you know, Naughty Dog, they're just like, oh, well, don't worry. You know, there's differences. You know, we did this, that, and the other thing. It's definitely worth it. And I'm like.
And they literally said it's not just a cash grab.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say put this one in the cash grab category.
Yeah, and I'm going to say you can probably avoid purchasing this, because literally you can buy the same game and have it look pretty much the same for PlayStation 4.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just no rhyme or reason to me for another, like, remaster.
I don't see the reason for a remaster, and quite a few people who were commenting on the leaked images kind of agree. They're like, yeah, that looks better, but why did you make it?
Yeah, like, it almost harkens back to, you know, Skyrim being re-released over and over and over again.
Say somebody's going to buy it every time.
I mean, I'm sure someone will buy the remaster of The Last of Us. I'm sure it will. It's just, to me, it's not worth it.
No, not worth it. Not somebody who has a PS5.
But I will say, you know what looks like a worthwhile game?
I don't know, Mason. Does it involve cats?
It does. Stray, a video game that allows you to control a adorable little kitty cat, just came out, and I really want to play it. Like, I haven't played it yet. Devin, you said prior to recording that you did play it.
I did play it.
But it looks like a lot of fun, actually.
So far, I'm probably about maybe 20 minutes in. It's not a very long game, so keep that in mind. Yeah. I'm about 20 minutes in, and it's definitely different. It's refreshing because it's so different.
Yeah, and I don't think it's supposed to be like one of those games that's supposed to be long. It's like one of those games, at least looking into it, it's like one of those that you can just play and kind of just do whatever you want. Like, you could do the story, or you can just be a cat.
Well, not exactly.
No?
It's fairly linear. You literally can't deviate from the path. And as the listeners know, I'm a person who takes so long in games because I have to search every single area to make sure I have everything before I move on to the next area.
Yeah.
This is very easy, and I don't have to do that because literally I can only go forward.
Because I saw clips where, like, of the game where people would just, like, pause, playing the game and, like, do, like, kitty cat things, like scratch chairs or sleep or, like, play basketball or...
You can do that, but, like, once you're in that area, you can do that, and then you just got to keep going on. I had to jump through this window, and inside the window was two carpets I could scratch. So I walked over there, and I scratched the carpets for about 5 minutes. And I was like, all right, time to keep going. Stopped, got me some water, meowed at a TV, and just kept on walking. All I am is just a cat on a mission. but one thing I found to be the most interesting about Stray is not even the game itself. It's how cats respond to it.
Okay, like real-life cats?
Like, real-life cats apparently enjoy watching Stray.
I can imagine.
So there's been people posting on Twitter with their cat just, like, perplexed.
Watching it?
Yeah, just watching it, just, like, and getting close to the TV to examine what's going on. Because the cats meow, and I'm curious... I'm curious if they use cat recordings to make the sound of the cat.
They probably did. They probably, like, actually had real cats and recorded them, meowing.
Well, I think that might be why, because once cat hears other cat sounds, they have to investigate.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Overall, it seems fun. It doesn't seem like it's that in-depth, to be honest with you. But I'm enjoying my little playthrough, and once I knock it out, I'll delete it and never play it again. Now, let's go over, in our podcast, we occasionally talk about unions.
Yes.
And because the video game industry is moving towards that direction. Because we're saying that if companies are basically allowed to do whatever they want, they usually will. And it's never a positive direction. Now, the union this time, Mason, do you have this story?
Yeah, I do. So this is a... The union that wants to form is going to be a part of Vicarious Visions, which is a subset of our favorite studio ever, Blizzard.
We didn't talk about them on the podcast, Blizzard?
Oh, no. We never talk about them, ever.
All right, cool.
Yeah. But so the QA team, a part of Vicarious Visions, wants to unionize. So it's about 20 people that want to unionize. And with unions... to be officially recognized as one, you just need to have like two or more people to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively, you don't have to be big, you know. They have filed for a union election with the NLRB, which is the National Labor Relations Board, which is the governing body that handles all of these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And according to the workers, they do believe that having a union going forward is going to give us like the power and the representation that they need to make the workplace ultimately better. And if this does get approved, it would transfer over to the acquisition done by Microsoft whenever that gets approved. And the workers also have said that this was inspired by Raven Studios, Starbucks, and Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, as we've talked on this before, where Raven Studios, their QA department unionized, Starbucks has been unionizing, and then that one Amazon facility finally unionized. The worker's request was actually acknowledged by Blizzard, surprisingly.
Blizzard is literally like, yeah, we're about to be bought by Xbox. We don't care.
Because if you remember, Devin, when Raven did it, they did not acknowledge it.
Yeah, they were like, we're going to need to hold on for a minute.
And it sounds like they've changed their tune. The spokesperson, Rich George, has said that we deeply respect the rights of all employees under the law to make their own decisions about whether or not to join a union. We believe that a direct relationship between the company and its employees is the most productive relationship. The company will be publicly and formally providing a response to the petition to the NLRB.
I have a feeling that their public response is going to be like, don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, the Raven Studio, their unionization happened in May.
Well, interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see when it becomes, like, official.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wish them well. I hope they win their bid, and I wish all the best for them, honestly.
We wish them very, very good luck, and we will keep you posted on any other union stories being created, or if Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, tries any more union busting attempts.
Yes.
Now, this next story is funny and it's sad at the same time.
Yep, unfortunately.
And unfortunately, but do you really feel bad?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
At all, because it's like we're playing a broken record over and over again. We're going to be talking about cryptocurrency again.
Yep. And as we've mentioned before, when it comes to cryptocurrency, it can be rife with scams.
Yes.
This is not something new. This is not something controversial. People are getting scammed in cryptocurrency, whether you like it or not. But a Bay Area man lost $380,000 investing in cryptocurrency, suggested by a woman, and get this, that he met online.
Gives a whole new definition to catfishing.
Is it, though? I think this is pretty standard.
No, it doesn't. It's basically the same thing as like other online scams go, you know.
So the guy, whose name is Kevin Sam of Antioch, met a woman online in February who reached out suddenly via direct message, which is not a red flag at all.
Gentlemen. No.
She was very kind. And this is a part that really bothered me. Still to this day, she's kind of empathetic, meaning she scammed him. And
he still remains in contact.
Still remains in contact.
That's insane.
That's how desperate men have gotten. He says their online relationship grew, but they still have not met in person, as if he thinks they're going to. Sam remembers her mentioning an investment opportunity in cryptocurrency on February 10th. Open the wallet and enter the mining pool, she wrote, urging Sam to invest with the site called DeFi-Base.com. Sounds official. He did just that, and he says it immediately paid off. Originally, it started at $2,000. Then it went up to $5,000 almost a week later, he said. So he invested more money. After $50,000, I was making $1,000 a day, said Sam. He even borrowed $100,000 for his mother to invest. But he says when he tried to cash out on some of his investments, he ran into problems. You are participating in the 7-day $100,000 UST gift on the mining pool. Cannot withdraw during the pledging period, the company told him. That was on March 5th. Mm-hmm. In all, he says he invested $225,000 and still hasn't been able to withdraw his money. He filed a complaint with the FBI. $225,000 was removed from my crypto Coinbase wallet without consent, Sam wrote. The FTC says it cannot comment on any current or potential investigations, nor can it comment on any particular crypto platforms. The agency issued a report, though, that put total losses in crypto-related fraud from January 2021 through the first quarter of this year at more than $1 billion.
Wow.
All right. I have to ask the question. Where are people getting all this money? $1 billion of just throwing it away.
Into imaginary money. Yep. This real sidebar here that reminds me of cryptocurrency. So a relative of my wife's had a baptism for her child that was born not that long ago. And, you know, in the invite for the baptism, you know, historically you give gifts, right?
Okay.
They can be like cash, check, other things of that nature, like physical gifts. Yeah. And then, so in the invite, she listed the gifts that would be accepted. And at the very, very broad, very, very bottom of the invite, it says, cryptocurrency is also accepted.
Absolutely not. I
not I'm just like, bruh, what?
I am not
sure. The fuck?
Up. People, man.
They're like, yeah, you can do Bitcoin, Ethereum.
As the markets, and this is continuing the sidebar, as the markets were down, like going straight, shooting straight down, I remember everybody was just like, oh, buy the dip, like it's going to shoot back up. And Bitcoin has started going back up, but like they were talking about buy Luna.
Yeah, right. And that like went bankrupt.
Yeah, buy Luna. It's so cheap. You put in a dollar, you'll be a billionaire by tomorrow morning. Guys, shut up. Yeah,
just don't bother with crypto. Don't bother with NFTs. It's just, it's all around just snake oil salesmen. And it's bad for the environment. So it's
very bad for the environment. But
speaking, so just don't bother. Like if you want to make money, just there's other ways to do it that are safer and less dangerous,
and that don't feel like you're scamming people.
Exactly. So,
speaking of scamming people, let's talk about Seth Green.
Yeah, because there's more that went on with his whole like NFT theft, apparently.
Yeah, so what happened was is that Seth Green had his like Bored Ape stolen or whatever.
Yeah, and then he paid for it back.
He paid $100,000 for it back. And apparently Seth Green was a part, Seth Green was not the perpetrator. Seth Green was a victim.
He was just a part of something.
He was just a part of a massive NFT scam.
Yeah. So when I saw this story, I don't think Seth knew that he was a part of it. I just think he was just a victim.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer. I don't think Seth Green was the master. I don't think he was the Dr. Evil.
No.
But basically, Vice News reports that Seth Green was a part of this multi-million-dollar scam campaign. A blockchain sleuth was able to trace the funds obtained through the sale of Seth Green's stolen NFT. La-di-da, so he paid $100,000 for the sale. Now, a blockchain detective said the theft of Green's NFT was part of a sophisticated multi-million-dollar scam operation that has roped in numerous victims. Zach XBT, one of the most well-known independent researchers who exposes scammers, grifters, and hackers in the world of cryptocurrency, wrote a long thread explaining his findings. Zach XBT wrote that he was able to trace the movement of the crypto that the scammer obtained by selling the stolen NFTs. Even though the hacker laundered a large amount of crypto through a small transaction, a technique known as Peel Chain, after that, the scammer sent the funds back to their wallet. This is just one example of the steps taken by the scammer. In reality, the scammer had laundered stolen crypto the same way through many different addresses for millions of dollars.
Huh.
All right, so can we all universally agree here that crypto and NFT can and most likely is being used to scam people?
I mean, I agree.
And like, it's not even like it's not even like the joke anymore. Like, this is a real thing. And listeners, we know we have the smartest listeners who are not upset with our vaccine statuses. Don't get involved.
NFTs, yeah, I mean, like I said before, I know it's appealing. And it is tempting to make a quick buck. You know, everybody wants to do quick, rich, quick schemes. Like, yep. Trust me, like, I am with you in that I would absolutely love to invest, like, maybe a couple thousand, $2,000, and then months later have, like, 30 plus grand. Like, who wouldn't want that, right? Like, but when something sounds too good to be true and the likelihood of, you know, getting that money and that success with an investment, it's just, you got to be very careful.
Do you remember those multi, like, level pyramid schemes?
Oh, yeah, the MLMs. This is basically a more involved MLM scheme.
This is LuLaRoe. Well, if you sign up your friends, and eventually if they sign up 10 people,
yep.
and then those 10 people sign up 10. No, only people making money are those who initially got in at the top.
Yeah, like just, focus on, again, safer ways to make money, safer investments that's not volatile like crypto or NFTs. Just there's not, better ways.
We are not a financial podcast, but here's financial advice. Don't invest.
Don't get involved.
All right, Mason, let's go to our review segment to finish yes. out our episode. I actually have something I would like to review.
Yeah, what you got?
Before we had the week off because the birth of Chris's baby, I mentioned that I may or may not be going to go see Thor: Love and Thunder.
Yeah, yeah. And you saw it that day.
After we had finished shooting that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
We finished shooting it and the movie was going to start showing in about 20 minutes. So I live about 15 minutes from the theater.
And there's 30 minutes of preview, so you were probably fine.
Oh, yeah, I was probably fine. But here was the kicker, though. When I went to go buy the tickets, it was a Thursday night, I think. When I went to go buy the tickets, every row was fully sold out except for two.
I believe that.
And guess what the two rows that were not sold out were?
Hopefully they weren't in the front row.
They were the first two rows in the front row.
Oh, that sucks.
Now, I don't like sitting next to people, especially when it's a packed theater, and especially when I'm by myself. I don't like doing it. It makes me feel weird. I don't know why.
No, I'm with you.
So I, out of just curiosity, I'm like, you know what? I haven't sat in the front row in a very, very long time. Let me sit in the second row from the front, because why would a theater have these chairs even in here if you couldn't sit in them?
Mm-hmm.
Like me. So I was the only person in my second row. And because nobody else clearly ever chooses these seats, the seats were practically brand new.
That's cool.
Right. So I leaned all the way back in my chair. And obviously it was close, but it worked out just fine.
Well, that's good. I was a little worried that you would be too close to the screen.
No. I was fine. So now here's my Thor Love and Thunder review. Earlier in the podcast, I swore off from going to the movies. The reason being is that movie theaters are insanely expensive. It is a hassle to get dressed and drive on down. Plus, I'm surrounded by strangers with weird smells. But if you are a frequent listener to this podcast, you know I have broken that trend to venture out to see the biggest blockbusters, such as Top Gun Maverick, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, Lightyear, and now Thor Love and Thunder. This is the fourth iteration of the Thor story. After some astronomically high bar that Ragnarok had set, many people walked into the movie with the highest of expectations, and unfortunately that bar was too high for the God of Thunder to overcome.
Oh.
The movie starts with narration not from our hero Thor, but his lovable sidekick Korg, as it gets us completely caught up with what has happened over the years. Once we are all caught up, our hero is joined by the Guardians of the Galaxy, remember them, for what appears to be a potential suicide mission. Fortunately for the Guardians, Thor manages to save the day with as much comedy that Liam Hemsworth could muster up. But this movie is not just about Thor, but also about Jane Foster, who has developed stage 4 cancer and searches for a way in which to stay alive. Without getting too much into the synopsis of the film, this is a 5 out of 5 romantic comedy. There were parts in the movie where I had to stop myself from laughing so loudly in the theater. This movie is legitimately funny. Special kudos has to go to Russell Crowe as Zeus, as he steals the thunder, pun intended, in every scene that he is in. The love story itself is one that many couples can relate to. Life gets busy, breakdowns of communication, and even the jealous new girlfriend. It is all so good that you forget you are watching a superhero movie. And that is the problem we find ourselves in. As a Marvel superhero movie, the stakes are not nearly as high as an Avengers film or even preceding the movie Ragnarok. Though Christian Bale plays a decent villain, Gore, the God Slayer, seems to be an addition to the tale and not a villain here to end it all. The movie does have some amazing action scenes, specifically one in black and white, but those are so far in between. For a film with a runtime under the two-hour mark, it felt significantly longer, and that is never a good sign. If you want a good laugh and a low-stakes Marvel film, you can't beat Thor in Love and Thunder. However, if you want a movie that'll keep you and your friends on the edge of your seat, you may have to assemble the Avengers elsewhere. As a romantic comedy, I give the movie a 5 out of 5, but as a superhero movie, I give it a respectable 3 out of 5.
Okay. That's not too bad. I thought you were going to rate it a little bit lower.
No, I think 3 out of 5 was fair. Because again, if you're comparing it, if it was not a superhero movie, if it was just a romantic comedy,
Yeah.
it's perfect across the board.
Okay.
But it's a Marvel superhero movie.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's a part of the MCU, but it doesn't feel like it is.
I got you.
So yeah, so that's my only thing review. I will be adding a stray review segment next week. Mason, you have anything in the review segment?
I mean I already touched on it briefly in like what I was playing, but I beat Hades, so I'm confident in giving it a review. I did mention and when I was talking about it, like the art style is amazing, music is superb, voice acting amazing, story also very good, playability high. It's just an overall like very, very solid game. If I were to give it a rating out of our uninformed gamers, I would probably give it like a 4.5 uninformed gamers out of 5.
That's high praise from a high good game.
So if you haven't played it, it's very worthwhile. I'm like very tempted to give it like a perfect score, but there were just minor aspects that you can nitpick at. So that's why it's not a perfect game.
Right. Well, I'm still a firm believer, Mason, that you need to play Death's Door only using an
Yes.
umbrella.
I will not play with the umbrella, Devin.
You have to.
Oh.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's give our sign-offs. You guys know me as Devin, also known as Darkness Tiger or Darkness Tiger 2 if you are on the PlayStation Network. You can find me at the top of every racing game leaderboard. You can also find me controlling the Twitter page at Uninformed Gamers. If you like what we do, be sure to give us a like and a share. Let your friends know about us. We're just an independent, a small independent podcasting studio here. Doing our best to bring about laughs and make you smile. Mason, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been Mason, also known as Rad Dreams from Rad Dreams Review. Feel free to follow me at my YouTube channel, Rad Dreams Review. We are going to be posting up some more content here soon, ideally next week, when the new set for the Digimon card game comes out. So look forward to that. And then also, feel free to check me out on my Twitch, which I am trying to be more active on. I did play Hades on my Twitch channel. So if you missed my playthrough, feel free to check me out there, rad underscore dreams. And keep an eye out for my Twitch content on July 29th, because I will be spending a good chunk of that day playing Digimon Survive, which comes out on that day.
All right. Well, we will catch you all next time. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye.
Take care. Peace.